I see a green light.
One thing I've learned is he is a huge fan of the dogs howling. Cassie will play her flute, and then the dogs will start singing along, and then the little kiddo just starts like beating away. He starts kicking and stuff. It's hilarious.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. And this week, we are down at least one Australian. I don't know if Rama's in the chat, but that means it's going to be difficult to talk about our main subject, as I know Noel, like me, is a big classics fan, which is Paris-Roubaix. Happened at the weekend. You fellas see it? A lot of controversy with the chicane at the Trouée de Arenberg. I don't know if...
I watched analysis of it, but I didn't actually watch it itself.
Did you? It's worth seeing what they did with the forest, with the Arenberg forest. It's really interesting, and yeah.
I'm picking our fourth member. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? It comes back. What do you mean? What day is it? He's like, I'm assuming the daylight savings has ended. Then I think it did like 3 weeks ago.
Maybe it's different in different countries when daylight savings ends. I kind of assume so.
But that's why we do it at UTC.
I mean, that is why we literally do it at UTC. We're into the European, the point where in Europe it's at the really inconvenient fucking time.
Does Australia do daylight savings?
They must.
I didn't think they did.
New Zealand does, I think.
Oh, they do? Oh, okay.
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he said Amsterdam does.
Ended on the 7th of April. Oh, okay. All right.
There was a whole thing, like all of Europe was supposed to not do it anymore from like 2019 or something, I want to say. They like, everybody agreed, daylight savings doesn't make sense anymore.
It's bullshit.
Not do it. People die for no reason. It's literally like there's a spike in traffic accidents, all sorts of shit. They were just
There is. Yeah, I remember that, reading that here too. It was like 20,000 deaths a year or something
That. I think the main reason it is for industrial manufacturing before there was ubiquitous lighting and it was easy. And it's just like, you need the daylight. And for like, you know, like farming and stuff, you know, back when that was here, a major industry.
Here, I thought it was something to do with voting. It was the ability to vote. It was something to do with farming and something to do with farmers and voting.
I thought it was farmers and trains.
It's farmers and something, which doesn't make a difference.
Definitely anymore. Farmers and something. I've watched some town, like some city councils where people are like, oh, we want to get rid of that savings. And people come up and being like, you can't get rid of it. What would we do with one fewer hour in the day?
Right.
I'm not sure that's how it works.
It was something to do with basically when the polls, I thought it was when the polls opened and farmers having to basically take care of livestock, but not being able to do that when the polls opened. And so they moved daylight savings to, I don't know, why don't they just change the fucking polling time?
Yeah. I think here the justification was farm. It was harvest. It was like having long time to harvest in particular, well, at harvest time, right? It doesn't make any fucking sense. Everybody agreed to not do it anymore. And as far as I can tell, the deadline passed. And then people just went, actually, like, it's a lot of admin to do this. We're just not going to do this yet.
Yeah. Ben Davis says, farmers can't vote if trains have to travel in the dark. That's exactly right. That's fucking
straight facts.
Straight facts.
These are the facts you come to Game of Nodes for. So, but back to Paris-Roubaix, right? So I'm going to describe, basically, at the entrance to the Arenberg Forest, there's just a 90-degree, like a chicane going off to the right, and then a hairpin. So you had to enter it at a walking pace. Like you couldn't enter it at 70 kilometers an hour straight onto the most deadly cobbles in the classic season.
Are they going 70 kilometers an hour?
Yeah, yeah. So this is why it's controversial, because the most fun thing about Paris-Roubaix is that it's such a decisive sector. You have to be in the center of the road because it's a double inverse camber. So
what the fuck is a double inverse camber? You mean an inverse camber?
It's a hump. So if you move off the center line, your wheel is going to tend to slide out. And obviously that's a problem if you're doing 50 kilometers an hour on wet.
Inverse camber. Yeah.
Yeah. So
camber. All
roads obviously have a hump in the middle, but because it's an old cobbled road. It's like
it slips away from the. If I'm turning right, it's slipping away from that, right? So it's
yeah. It makes although it more to be fair, Arenberg is way flat.
They
straight.
They added. They added it. This wasn't part of the. Oh, geez, what? I'm looking at it right now. This is ridiculous. They had to like turn out and then turn back in to get back. What?
They enter the forest literally at walking pace, and then everybody has to speed up again. So they're like, it's a rider safety thing, and I get that, but the whole of Paris-Roubaix is super dangerous. Like they literally wouldn't make this race again if it wasn't 100 years old. There's no way anybody would be like, this is a good idea. They would be like, no, this is illegal and you are banned from just the fact that you even suggested this race, you're going to prison, you know? But the whole point is Paris-Roubaix is kind of a blood sport. Like I want to see the best sprinters in the world leashed into fighting it out to enter a 20-meter wide portal to hell where there is only one line that doesn't get you killed. And I want them to do it at 60 kilometers an hour and possibly end their career doing it. That's my hot take on it. There are loads. Everything I've seen was just like, well, rider safety. I'm like, you don't. We're watching Paris-Roubaix. Rider safety is not a priority to people who think it's the best race in the year. Like in our, like we're just not saying that. That's our inside thought. It's not the outside thought. Cause it's not popular to say an athlete at the top of their game might have their career ended by entering the Arenberg Forest too fast. But it's really exciting. That's the moment every year. That portal to hell moment where they all are sprinting into it, and you're like, what the fuck is going to happen? Like last year when somebody's wheel literally just disintegrated in the first 20 minutes, 20 meters or so, it was on the footage, just like disintegrate. You're like, this is insane. This is the best race of the season. And now they're just like, no. We're going to enter at a walking pace.
Oh, so they changed it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. See, that's kind of like F1. Like F1's the same way. Like you never know what's going to happen in turn one because it's such a clusterfuck of 20 cars entering this situation and really tight and everything else. And after that, it's fucking boring. Nothing else happens.
And, you know, even with the chicane, there was still a really decisive, like somebody still flatted, right. And it ended up being moderately decisive, although I guess they kept their cool. So it didn't affect the race too much. And then,
So they put a chicane in before the turn. Is that what they did?
They put a chicane in before the hardest sector of cobbles in the entire race.
Oh, okay. It's so, like the back stretch. It's like the back stretch.
It's supposed to be a straight stretch though, which is interesting. So they have you like kick off and then come back around.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the Mulsanne. The Mulsanne straight on Le Mans, right? Like it's just too much. Like they're just going too fucking fast and it's super exciting. And then they're going from like what it used to, well, in the 60s, 70s used to be from 180, 200 miles an hour down to, you know, whatever that first turn is, it's like 60. And then they said, okay, maybe we'll just put a chicane in here and just slow it down.
Yeah. That's basically what they did. Except that in this analogy, let's imagine that it is that Le Mans straight, but you're also going from the tarmac to like gravel. I don't know what there isn't an F1 equivalent because you can't run an F1 car on gravel, but you can run a road bike on 120-year-old cobbles.
They should do that.
They should do a cobbled sector.
There's something in the UK they do that. What they do, like a mix of maybe it's only in the UK or in Europe, but they do like a mix between gravel and dirt, and they go back to tarmac, and they go like they do a loop, but they like break it up. I remember seeing it on Top Gear a bunch of years ago, but
isn't that
they had a little thing on?
Are we talking about rally here? Because
no, it's not rally.
As soon as you're on gravel, surely that's rally.
Well, they do that in rally as well, but this one was like actually a closed circuit. Like it was like a 1 mile loop, but you would actually have sections of tarmac and you'd have sections of dirt, which was totally fun because some cars were obviously geared more towards a tarmac side, right? And then they would struggle when they get off road, and other ones would be much more comfortable in terms of just sliding through the dirt, and then they would struggle on the tarmac side. So it was actually pretty fun. Anyway, I forget what the hell it's called. I'll have to look it up. Because that was actually pretty cool.
It'll be in the show notes.
It'll be in the show notes.
Maybe we'll put it in the show notes.
Maybe I'll forget.
If you're listening to this podcast, later, or if you're on Twitter X, let us know. What do you think of the Truro d'Arenberg this year? I mean, obviously, yeah, you know, maybe rider safety is a priority. I don't know. I like seeing the best cyclists in the world nearly die. Hitting that sector, but Well, yeah. What you gonna do? Anyway,
I mean, honestly, if they do die, they're obviously not the best cyclists in the world, right? So it is a bit of a selection situation.
I mean, let's be fair.
Well, but also they're riding on like 25 mil tires, which is utterly absurd to me on cobbles. Me, I ride 42s on gravel, and that even feels like not enough.
But that 25. That goes back to the tarmac gravel situation. Like, couldn't some riders decide to run on 42s and then be faster in that section on the cobbles?
There is actually a rule. There is a rule on maximum tire width.
No, there wasn't.
Yeah,
there really?
Is. Yeah, there is. For
really? Why would they give a shit?
For road bikes in UCI road races, I'm pretty sure it's 32. That's the absolute maximum.
Why would they give a shit? Because it's a time-based thing, right? So it's, everybody has their own decision. Because
there's a very strict difference between a cyclocross bike, a road bike, a TT bike. If you ride the wrong type of bike in the wrong type of race, it confers an unfair advantage versus the other riders, and you'll be disqualified. Like, same reason you can't ride a TT bike on even if you had like a flat, dead straight road stage, like a transition stage in the Tour de France, for example, where you might literally ride flat in a straight line 40 miles. Yeah. You can't ride a TT bike on that. You're not allowed because it's a road stage. It's not a TT stage.
Okay, that sounds more reasonable now. Yeah,
so it's just a UCI rule. You know, same as like cyclocross races. If you turned up with a mountain bike to a cyclocross race, they'd be like, what are you doing? Can't do this.
But time shit, I don't think it matters. Like, I mean, obviously it was not an e-bike. What the fuck? Like, that seemed like it would be a heavier, more difficult thing to be able to get through. So it seems like it adds some strategy to it.
There are things that people have tried. Obviously, like, you can do different things with equipment within the limits, and people have tried a whole bunch of things. There was that specialized bike a few years ago with like suspension in the top tube and all sorts of stuff, right? But it turns out there is basically no substitute for having strong upper body and being quite heavy. That is the special sauce, and that's what we saw at the weekend, right? Heavy, strong classic rider who is a good time trialist just destroyed the field, and it was borderline boring when it came to the velodrome at the end of the day. Women's race, however, that final 10 kilometers, holy shit, that was exciting. I was shouting, we in our house, we were shouting at the TV in the by the time they got to the velodrome, it was good.
Prosper Gaminode's friend of the show hit me up in our own Discord to tell us that the motorsport that we're talking about is called Rallycross. That is exactly what
Rallycross. Interesting.
Yes. Rallycross is fun. Yes.
Yes. Which I think
I've never seen that. Like, I've heard the name, but I couldn't picture what it looks like.
So I actually have a friend that does Rallycross with a Mazda Miata, and it looks absolutely ridiculous.
So primarily Netherlands, Belgium, France, and Great Britain, but also in the SSCA here in the US. So, never mind. That's different.
Isn't that one where
super fun, though?
It's just like dirt, and they have those special motorbikes where they have like the shape of it's super weird, and it has a really elongated like kind of tail, and they just basically ride in this weird sort of ellipse. I can't remember what it's called. Is that Speedway? Like, their body positions, they're always like kind of kicked out to the side.
NASCAR?
No, Speedway. It's motorbikes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. That's wild. Like, it's very, very mesmerizing. Anyway.
This is the most I've ever talked about cycling in my life.
Yeah.
In one 14 minute
the
spot.
It's unbelievable. Best race in the year has just happened. And I don't get to cycle much at the moment because of life stuff. I'm looking forward to doing it again when things calm down. So sounds I have awful. To vicariously do it at the moment. I also saw June 2 this week, huh? That was...
You saw what?
Ooh, what did you think of it?
I saw it. You've already seen it?
Godzilla. I haven't seen it, but I did see Godzilla and Kong, the new Empire, this week. And that was a lot of fun.
Is that new?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know how... I mean, it's in theaters right now. If that's what you're asking. Yeah.
I don't know. There's a new Kong movie?
Kong and Godzilla, but really, yeah, it's really just Kong. Godzilla makes an appearance and goes rah, and that's about as far as it goes, and the rest is all King Kong.
Nice. I managed to get myself pretty strongly. A friend of mine, like a couple of days after I went, was like,
"Hey,
yo, I've just seen June. Hey, man." And I was like, "Oh man, did you see the after credits scene?" And they were like, what the fuck? There's an after credit scene? And I was like, yeah, man, yeah. And they were like, fucking hell. And then they like, literally, you know when somebody just doesn't even message you back for a while, can you tell they're a little bit pissed off? And then like a few minutes later, they were like, all right, well, I can't be, I'm not going to be able to find it. What happened? And I was just like, it said, the story will be concluded in June part three. Aye. And they were like, oh, yeah, I read an article about that. Don't worry, I already knew that. And I was like, wait, what? And they were like, yeah, do you not know there's going to be another June? I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, there's going to be another June. And they're like, so wait, was there no after credits scene? And I was just like, ah, now the hunter has become the hunted. it's devastating. Between that and the whole hospital thing, my week has been, I thought it was going to be a good week, get some work done, a few pranks, few little yucks.
Dune 3 confirmed to be in development.
Yeah. So now I look like I'm the idiot. I thought I got them good. Turned out I was the one being got.
You should have just really ran with it and been like, yeah, you know, maybe it's one of those like Bernstein Bear effects, the Mandela effect, where you tried to go watch the credit scenes, but they didn't have it anymore. In some reality, they did have it. You know what I'm talking about, the Mandela effect?
The one where people like imagine a thing, like that Shazam movie that everybody thinks is...
Yes. Yeah, with Sinbad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, everybody thinks that movie exists. It totally does not exist.
That's your example of the Mandela effect.
That's a great one.
Well, what example would you give?
Bernstein Bears is my go-to because apparently it's spelled like A-I-N, but in my memories, it's E-I-N. It's Bernstein Bears, not Bernstein Bears.
No, it's Bernstein. Wait, how's it spelled?
I think it's spelled S-T-A-I-N at the end, but my memory says it's E-I-N, like the German Stein, right? But I think it's S-T-A-I-N is correct.
Holy fuck, you're right. I totally would have thought that would have been E-I-N.
Right? Yeah.
They're stain bears. I hate these things.
So, no, what's your... How come you're late?
Man, it's... I got snookered by the fucking... daylight savings ended. I didn't even know.
Oh, I need to pause you right there. What word did you just use? What Australianism was that?
Snookered.
Snookered. Got snookered.
You guys don't have that?
Snookered. No. No, no.
It's funny.
I don't know that one.
Okay, I have a fun fact about snooker. My favorite fact about snooker, in fact, which is, these guys obviously have no fucking clue. No, did you guys have the TV program Big Break, the snooker game show? Did you have that back in the day?
Don't think so. Oh, maybe. I'm not. Maybe.
You might remember it if I'm going to hum you the theme tune, right? It has that theme tune where it's like, it's only a game, so snooker in you, snooker in you tonight. Big break.
Like, I've heard a jingle like that, but I've never seen a show with snooker where they just played snooker.
My favorite snooker fact is not even about snooker, it's just about the program Big Break, really. Apart from the bit where it goes Big Break, the rest of that is just a song from an actual musical. Like, I can't remember it. Somebody told me what it was, and it's actually like a quite famous musical. Just has a song about snooker in it, and that's what they use for the theme tune for Big Break. Anybody British in the comments is like going to go, that's an actual song. Yeah, apparently it is. Apparently it's from a musical or something. It just coincidentally
had no idea. No idea.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of people in the chat from the UK, I think. So somebody else can either fact check that, agree with it, or whatever, but apparently it's a real legit thing. So anyway, daylight savings, how's it working out for you?
Well, yeah, man, I didn't even know that it ended, so it's fine. Sun's coming up later. It's pretty nice. There's more dark time for sleeping. And, yeah, you know, life is good.
There's more dark time.
I mean, it's fucking daylight savings, what do you want me to say? Comes and goes.
So you guys started April 7th, huh?
Yeah, April 7th, I, you know, seemingly unannounced. I don't know if I just didn't leave the house that day or something, but...
Everything automatically moved forward. You didn't even notice?
Yeah, like, well, the only reason I would have noticed is if I, like, went to a store that I would usually go to at the open time and it was closed. You had to
leave the house. Everything else is in UTC in your place. You're like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's, well... I mean, you're not going to tell, right? It's like it's on the time's just on your phone. So you wake up and then
it's just different.
Time's there. It's like you don't know if it's going back or forward. You don't know, like maybe I had a good night's sleep that night and I wasn't like, oh, geez, I lost an hour. I'm tired. Oh.
The only reason I know is kids.
Most nights you're up in fucking half the night anyway with like failed upgrades. So
it's just, you wait until you're up half the night with a different kind of failed upgrade. Because
they're fucking miserable. Fucking
kids are never going to
sleep again. They're fucking miserable. Or they're up. You're like, why the fuck are they up at six? Like, oh, yeah, daylight savings.
Currently going through that that 6 o'clock is wake up time thing. And I'm wondering if it's ever going to end.
It does.
Maybe not.
It does. Ours are getting... When they get older, they start sleeping in a little bit, but it takes a long time. Ours still get up at 7, but like at least that's better than used to be up at like 5:45 or something, 5:45.
I'm just like, I'm the absolute epitome of not a morning person. Like,
yeah,
a few times in my life where genuinely have had no contract work, no anything. Holiday, that's what they call it. Nothing to do. Holiday, that's what the word all people use.
That's the word.
Vacay. Probably get up at like 11 or something. That's probably a sensible time for me. So it's kind of like, it kind of feels a little bit like torture. Somebody just like pokes you awake at like not a good time. And you're like, cool, I'm up. Better make a coffee. Let's go. Let's go.
Just happens. But we had a couple of kids like sleeping past 8:30. That's fucking, that's good times, man. That's like...
It's so good that we're out.
What happened to SERP?
So did Pennsylvania just... Wait, you SERP, what state are you in?
Fuck off.
You're out and back so quickly that I couldn't even make a joke about your state being nuked.
It just kicked me off. I don't know. I just got booted.
I was like, oh my God, Pennsylvania just got nuked. And I was like, that's not the right state.
Close enough.
It's like
that is the right state.
Close enough.
Is it? I don't know. Doxed. Anyway, wait. I thought Pennsylvania is just that little weird bit next to DC.
Mm-hmm. It's a big weird bit next to DC. But yes, that's correct.
A bigger state than I think. Yeah. It is. It's not like some common small.
No, it's a huge. It's a huge state in the Mid-Atlantic. You would say Ohio, PA, New York.
It is actually kind of surprising how large it is, given that it's on the East Coast. Everything else is so much smaller in comparison.
Yeah, it's two different major cities that want nothing to do with each other.
What major cities are in Pennsylvania?
Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, who are totally opposite cities in a lot of different ways. Like, it's a weird state.
I think I've only seen a picture. I think I can only picture what Philadelphia looks like. I don't think I can picture what Pittsburgh looks like. Famous films has Pittsburgh, are either set in Pittsburgh or... has been used for filming.
They shoot a lot of films in Pittsburgh.
The Christopher Nolan Batman films were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Just the third one, the Bane one.
Oh, really? I thought it was the first one.
Chicago.
No, the first one. The second one was definitely Chicago. The Joker one was Chicago. The first one I thought was...
part of London, for sure.
Yes. I think all three of them were partly shot in London.
I think because they did some stuff at Pinewood, I guess. So they used some locations.
The first one I thought was... I don't remember. I don't think it was here though. I thought it was just the Bane one. The Bane one was the big one because they use Heinz Field and they use some stuff up in CMU and a bunch of shit.
Right.
But
I'm not really sure.
The first one, I can't remember where the first one was. I thought it was New York actually, but that could be wrong. That doesn't seem right.
I think the first Avengers also had a presence in Pittsburgh.
They shoot a lot of movies here or in the Berg just because I think it's I don't know. Has a lot of different aspects and areas that kind of fit into different types of themes, and I think it's cheap. It also helps, centrally located, all that kind of good stuff.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, I also saw that. Have you seen that Past Lives film?
No.
It's good. Like obviously, like yeah. Given that I was like shilling June earlier, it couldn't be more different. It's like there's probably like 40 lines of dialogue in 90 minutes. Very good. Just lots of just like a really well-paced good.
What is it?
What's it called?
Past Lives. It's a Korean, I think a Korean American picture.
Oh yeah.
It's about a Korean family that emigrate to Canada I guess that's kind of like the setup for it, but it's about a couple of characters who meet it a few times in their lives, basically.
Pretty highly rated.
Yeah. I mean, it's really well paced. It's really well acted.
Drama,
it's
just like romance. Christ.
Well, that's a description. Wait,
what did you say? What'd you say? Did you say drama and romance?
Yeah. Fuck.
And I was like, if it doesn't have and explosions, I'm out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
It's explosions and guns. I'm out.
I need BBM and fucking explosions and shit.
Hey, then can I recommend Dune 2 for you?
Dune 2 is pretty slow.
I haven't watched it.
It's quite a lot of
explosions. Oh, no. Is it as slow as the first one?
Not quite as slow as the first one.
They're all slow.
I picked up the pace marginally.
I mean,
I liked it, but man, by the end of it, I was like, that might have been the longest 2.5 hours of my life.
There's just no like, do you have a siesta and then come back, or like fucking, I don't know. Some of these longer movies drag ass. Like that Batman, that was like Christopher Nolan's cut or whatever. Yeah. It was like three hours long. I was like, fuck, man, will this movie end?
Yeah. Yeah, we just watched all three of those, actually, the Nolan ones. And I thought it was the third one, right? It was the one we were just talking about, the Bane one. And then I think we felt like we were watching it forever, and I paused it, and the Plex bar was like 30%. I was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, what the, it was fucking bedtime. Like,
actually, yeah, wasn't this? It like 5 hours or something? The
I don't think it was that.
No.
It was over three hours, though, I think.
I think you're thinking of the Zack Snyder cut of Batman versus Superman. That one's like 5 hours.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking about, man. That was long. I don't think I watched it all. I was like, yeah,
5 hours. Who's got fucking?
Yeah, who's got half a day to sit there and like watch a movie,
especially like a Zack Snyder movie?
In saying that, I have just back to back, you know, episodes of a TV show all day. That if it's a good show.
What the fuck was that movie called? I don't even know what the hell it was called.
I'll also throw down with the extended edition Lord of the Rings all in a row. Like, I'll mainline that.
That's like, that's like
165 minutes, apparently, Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight, that's it, right? Rises? Yeah?
Yeah, 165.
No, that's actually, oh, yeah. That sounds about right.
It's not that long. But, yeah, the what's it called? What was the thing you just said? Shortly, my brain just fucking seized up.
I mainline the extended cut of Lord of the Rings all the way through. I can watch those back to back to back.
That is long. That's like, because those are so long that they're on two DVDs, aren't they? They literally go like, and now continue your adventure on disc two.
Oh yeah, they're like 3.5 hours each. Yeah,
it's actually every average Nolan movie has to be over 2.5, right? Easily. Tenet,
the Zack Snyder cut,
Interstellar is 3.
Interstellar, though, was...
Inception is 2 hours and 48 minutes.
Batman Inception begins is half an hour too long, though. Everybody knows that. That whole third act, you could just get rid of.
Yeah. Interstellar's
good. It's such a good film. And it's quite really well paced. And then you're like, this snowy bullshit. Yeah, okay, we know you like James Bond. Just don't have this bit in the film. You've lost your audience.
Did you ever see that analysis?
I thought Tenet was probably one of the better paced Nolans.
Tenet? Even Tenet? Tenet's fucking...
Yeah, Tenet was really... I thought that was really good. That was one of the only ones where I wasn't looking at my watch thinking, Christopher, will you just please write a concise third act? Prestige as well, actually. That's another... That's probably... That and Memento is two ones that are perfectly paced, I reckon.
I always forget the Memento is by Christopher Nolan.
And Dunkirk is what? Like, that seems... That movie seemed long, but actually only showing an hour 46 here.
Yeah, Dunkirk is just, it feels long because you're just watching a bunch of people stood around waiting.
Well, there's not a lot of dialogue in that movie either, right? You have a lot of just like visuals. That was a fun movie though. I liked it.
Yeah, Dunkirk was kind of weird. I didn't really understand. Like, it was one of those where I was like, okay, cool. Christopher Nolan's done Dunkirk, but I don't see what Christopher Nolan's added to Dunkirk.
What do you want to add?
Well, I would mark down 1917 as one of the best war films. Dunkirk was good. I really enjoyed it. But 1917, I thought was...
I've actually not seen 1917.
That was good.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, George MacKay is like... That's like a crazy role going through
that's the one where... Is it all... That's the one where it's all like a virtual single shot, isn't it?
Some of the early, I think maybe one of the longest early single shots, right? That first one came out at a similar time
as Birdman, didn't it? So that's why I think people were talking about it. But I think Birdman hasn't really stood the test of time. Like, it was quite impressive at the time. Like, the acting was really good and the cinematography obviously was good, but it's a bit like, no, maybe I need to go rewatch it.
I've never seen it.
I remember liking it at the time, but then in hindsight, it's not like something like, I don't know, Widows?
Strange Brew.
Or yeah, like something else where there's like really, really striking scenes where you're like, yeah, that's going to stay with me. Like that single shot in Widows is still one of the, like, it's a stunning piece of cinema. That, have you seen that film?
No.
It's like a heist movie. I think it's set in Chicago. And there's just one.
What's it called again?
Widows.
Widows?
Mm. Yeah.
All right, that's
It's really good. It's like a heist movie. Got a really good cast. But there's this one.
Oh, I've seen this.
If you've seen it, there's one really long shot, which is just so well done, where somebody goes and gets into a car, and just through the passage of the shot, they tell you, like, just, you're just like, this is, it's annoying because you go like, more, the reason that it's actually really gracefully done, the shot isn't very showy and it shouldn't draw attention to itself. But the only reason it does is you're like, this is such good filmmaking. You realize how lazy a lot of the other films you watch are, because you're like, this is how you can visually give a huge amount of information really elegantly, really gracefully using the medium without actually just using loads of crap dialogue. And it's just there's a very, very great shot in it that I happen to love. And, but also loads of the performances in it are really good. And it's a really good film. It's a good heist movie. It's always kind of fun to have good heist movies. They're a good genre.
It is a good genre. I was actually, last night I was watching Heat because on YouTube, like, YouTube's putting all these free movies up lately. So like The Godfather's on there for free, like Heat's on, Strange Brew, like, which is really only three movies you really need. I mean, to be honest, if you want to just like, you want to boil all the shit down, it's, you only need those three. You should get rid of this Plex server.
Put those down in your pocketbook.
Heat, The Godfather, Strange Brew. Like, if you're on a desert island, maybe Spinal Tap. All right, you throw that in, you get a fourth, then you're kind of doubling the genre, but whatever. So, but they're all on YouTube. Like, they just put them up for free now, which is, and they're actually decent copies. Like, they're, I don't know, 1080 or 4K or whatever. But I was watching Heat last night, which is also like, Michael Mann movies are always like, yeah, exactly. It's silly. I mean, there's some stupid shit in there, but it's like one of my favorite movies.
It's also, do you know what? I don't want to say credible, but it's just about rooted enough that you can forgive the really silly stuff and stay like, this could happen in LA. Yeah, this could happen in LA.
Right.
Like, I'm sure if you live in LA, you're probably like, fuck this film. But don't know. It's a great film, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
We're doing hot takes. Like, The Godfather 2, it's not a very good film. Just because you said The Godfather there. Everybody goes on about it. I don't understand it. Like, The Godfather is like...
I like one better than two.
And everybody's like, oh yeah, The Godfather 2 like makes it even better. And you're like, I haven't seen that film in maybe 20 years, right? I rewatched it recently and I was like, wow, this is a lot worse than I remember. This film's fucking... It's a 5 out of 10. I do not understand what the fuss is about.
I mean, the weird part of it for me is like, I really don't like flashback things. Like, I just want the story to progress, and like the whole De Niro thing of it, like, it's just like, let's just get on with it. Like, I just want to see, like, let's move forward with Michael's transition into just fucking degeneracy. And like, let's like that. That's the story, right? Like, the story is Michael breaking out of the family. And then but
that's exactly what I mean. Like, half of the film is a half finished.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
About Marlon Brando's early life. And you're like, look, the thing is, I already know everything I need to know about that character from film.
Like, I don't care how he walked into that opening scene in The Godfather with him in that room. I know everything about that. I know everything about that character. I don't need to know the backstory of that. Like, it's not that interesting, right? Because like in there, you know, with the Undertaker and all that's like that, that totally sets the entire series.
It would be like if June 2 was not what June 2 actually was, but instead it was a bit of like half about Paul doing stuff and gradually kind of trying to work out the limitations of, you know, what his destiny will be and whatnot. And then half of it is like how his father, Duke Leto Atreides, wanted to be a freighter pilot, but then had to gradually accept that he was actually the Duke of one of the Lanzarad houses. And you'd be like, oh yeah, now I finally understand why he had the bull's head over his door and a weird attitude towards authority. And it's like, and great, that would add absolutely nothing and nobody cares because it's not important. What you need to know about him is that
he is
popular in the Lanzarad. There you are, done. And then all you need to do is know about the character, which is done by acting. Yeah.
I do like all this shit with Fredo though. Like that piece, like that whole,
it's a good meme as well. Like that, if only for the memes it's given us, that is,
yeah.
I know it was, it's great. That's all Michael content again.
That half of the movie, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Like, but like the whole like fucking Fanucci and all that shit back in the day and like the olive oil, like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still.
Heat, great. So good though. Heat. Yeah. I mean, there's, I don't know. Who's, what's his face from Heat that passed away?
Tom Sizemore?
Yeah.
Is he passed away?
Isn't he? Oh, God. I hope. Wait. Tom, if he not, yeah, he died last year.
Really?
Yeah. He was battling addiction for a long time because he was like on a bunch of reality shows, I remember, from the early 2000s. Like on fucking, what's that dude from Loveline? I can't remember what that guy's, but he had a reality show about like people battling heroin addiction, all that kind of stuff. And Tom was on there too. And that is such a great fucking Tom Sizemore movie. He is such a fucking awesome, like just a great character. Like just a, like completely fills that role. Like it's just a really great, that role is just awesome for him. And same with Val too. Like that's a great Val role too.
It is good. Yeah. No, yeah. You know what? The only problem is though, I think with Val Kilmer in that film is you keep going, oh yeah, Val Kilmer is in some good stuff.
No.
And then it's like an insta fail, isn't it? As soon as you're sat there thinking, oh, this actor's in some good, this is great. He's doing just fine. Look at him. Look at him.
He's a good badass in that movie though.
Val Kilmer films. Have you seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
I have. Yeah.
That, and also it's got Thingy in it being a little bit less annoying than he quite often is. Iron Man, what's his fucking, Downey Jr. is in it as well, isn't it?
Tom.
Mm-hmm. And is a bit less annoying than usual. That's another good film.
That's just a real, it, like Heat is just such a, it's a really well, it's really well cast. Like Pacino, I know, is it, it's still the only Pacino De Niro movie, right?
Must be.
I think. Yeah. I think it is the only one.
That they actually are on screen together with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Val, obviously John Voight, great. Sizemore has been awesome in that. Ashley Judd was great fucking character in that. It's just really well done. And that Wangro dude, what's that? Kevin Gage.
I mean, do you know what? It also does that thing for the audience, you know, where you see the problems coming because they're quite clearly telegraphed and everything, but you feel it makes you as the audience know 100% what's kind of going on all the time and really understand it from the character's point of view. But it also makes you feel like really clever for being like, that guy's trouble, and you're like, of course he's trouble. He literally wouldn't be in the film unless he was trouble. That is the point of that character.
Yeah, but still, like, I think Michael leaves, there's still parts of that story that like you're stuck as a viewer trying to figure out, like that ending in terms of how the whole, it all goes bad, and then like, and then what's his face from what's the singer who's in there in that movie from God damn it, somebody help me out, somebody in the comments help me out, who's the guy who plays Hugh Benny, I'll think of it anyway, but like how that ending goes in terms of how they're getting busted and like how the cops get tipped off to them, and now they're like, there's still a bunch of like plot points you got to figure out on your own, which I really enjoy as well.
Yeah, fair.
Good flick. Why can't I think of who the hell that nobody helping me out? Henry Rollins. God damn it. Fucking Henry Rollins.
I don't know about it. It's late here. I could be excused, but yeah, okay. Should have got Henry Rollins, to be fair. So
great albums.
Any blockchain? So so background here as well. I've been off the last week. Or not this week. I'm back. I'm obviously here. I'm at work. Well, I'm not at work, it's night here. But previously was at work again. But I missed whatever did happen last week, if indeed anything did happen last week. So yo, what's happening? I see prices are down. Are they? They kind of seem down. Like,
yeah, damn bad.
Yeah. Everybody turned off the line go up technology. I took a couple of days off and you all turned it off. Could you turn it back on?
It depends on what tokens you're talking about.
I don't know. Well, I mean, on the news front, I know that there's some shenanigans, isn't there, in the Grayscale Bitcoin ETF, right? Which is that basically people who were able to buy it before it became exchange traded, disproportionately cashing out. So it's apparently hemorrhaging cash to the tune of $15 billion of outflows, and 5K BTC per day is being cashed out. And they're like, unless that slows down, they don't have enough BTC to cover it. But of course it will slow down, right? Because it's just early investors dumping, you know, realizing profits, right?
No, I didn't think it was that though. I thought when I was reading about that, because I saw a little bit around that, I thought they were just moving to other lower cost ETF options. I don't know if it was actually dumping, because like PTC
have enough money to cover their obligations. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem about them being liquid as a company. I think it's about what's being sold of the bitcoins that they hold.
So in this, I will link an article in the show notes, but basically that the Grayscale ETF had over 618,000 Bitcoin, which is actually fucking incredible. I didn't realize it was that large. And then right now today, or around this time, which is April 2024, has around 328,000, which is down an average of about 5,000 or 5,100 Bitcoin per day that's bleeding out. But again, like I think that those outflows, I don't think it's not going to cash though. My understanding, at least in terms of reading some of this and some of the other articles that we'll link, was really kind of going to other options that might be able to deliver at a lower fund or a lower cost or anything else like that.
Yeah. So I saw something about that, but then there was also, apparently, I don't know what percentage it makes up. It might be a very minor percentage, to be fair, but apparently there's also a question of like exposure to some of the companies that have gone bust recently, like
FTX,
Genesis, mm-hmm. and obviously FTX, who had significant holdings with them, like pre-listing, I think. And apparently those funds are being used to pay back the, because you remember there was that whole thing with FTX where they needed to pay back their customers, and because Bitcoin's price had gone up, they were able to pay back more than they would have been able to on the basis of their fraud at the time of discovery, because the price has gone up so much since then that they actually have more hypothetical assets were they to liquidate to actually pay back those funds. But I think not all those Bitcoins obviously are held specifically by the now former FTX that held in things like this Bitcoin ETF and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I don't think that's like, it's not enough to make it unstable. Like you say, it's probably just people shuffling around between other Bitcoin ETFs.
I mean, say what you want, but 618,000 Bitcoin down to 328,000 is still
big outflow,
massive drop in terms of outflow. Or,
sure. Even if it's not like an outflow, it's a big reduction for them. Apparently they're applying to actually create a new ETF of some kind that's like a mini version with different fee structure to try and recapture some of that lost market. This is all just like financial shenanigans now at this point, but it's all, you know, if you're a Bitcoin maxi, that's all positive news for Bitcoin, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised. Like, what those? I'm gonna look really quick on what those fees are, because I mean, it's fucking holding a digital token. Like, how much fucking fees are there?
Well, that's just like, it. Like,
it's like, actually pretty high. It's
like, what the fuck? I'm not fucking doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, it seems weird to have like high fees for. Well, I was about to say high fees for something that doesn't really have particular fees, but I guess yeah.
I'm looking at the page on Schwab, and they're showing an expense ratio of 1.5%, which is pretty high for. Is there any other? I mean, literally 100% of their assets are in Bitcoin, so it's not like it seems very. That seems kind of wild, but okay. Now I get it. 1.5% for just sitting around seems to be a little bit much. I mean, you might as well pay that to validators.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, or just buy Bitcoin directly yourself, right? I mean, just why not just buy Bitcoin on Kraken or something and then just hold it, just put it on a ledger and put the ledger in a bank vault and just be like, well, no fees to 2026.
Yeah, seems a little bit nuts.
But yeah, on securities news as well, the US Court of Appeals, do you see this news this week? The thing about secondary sales of crypto. So they ruled in favor of Coinbase that the secondary sales that they do not violate the Securities Exchange Act. So they're kind of basically, I guess, setting up the stage for one more round of legal shenanigans on that, which is kind of interesting because it's the question of issuing tokens versus selling something that already exists, right? Is my naive understanding of what's going on there. And that's kind of the basis, I think, of Coinbase's argument. They're like, look, we're not minting shit. We're just, people have stuff, they want to sell it, we buy and sell, we're making the money.
Making the money.
I assume that's basically the basis of their legal argument, and that's what they did in court. Yeah. You know, like, they're basically like Del Trotter for the Brits. Just no income tax, no VAT, no money back, no guarantee. Now, that was a theme song written for the show. I think, anyway. Maybe I'm wrong about that, too. But that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Whatever. There's so many different cases that are open. And, I mean, we can also talk about there was another one the Uniswap thing we should talk about. But there's so many cases that are open, and you have different aspects of U.S. government agencies, whether that be different parts of our government that vote that basically decide different aspects of whether it's a securities or not, right? So this Coinbase thing is great, but again, like, they're just, to your point, like, they're just going, hey, we're just brokers in here, so therefore we're not liable for whether this is security or not in the security.
Yeah, I guess at any given time, there's like one case over here, and then there's two cases over here, and they're all mutually contradictory. So
yeah. This one around Coinbase, the idea around user agreements. Did you look at that at all? And like what they were talking about in terms of what the user agreements were? I guess the user agreements were important because they changed over time, and they were trying to be able to say that they had no liability in this component. Or like, I wasn't sure exactly what that meant.
I don't know, but I know that there's been a whole bunch of shenanigans around similar things in the UK where they've tried to be like, I think it was Binance tried to be like, they tried to do something with the user agreements when the laws changed here slightly. And then they were like, oh no, it's actually not that. It's going to, you don't have an agreement with us. You have this agreement with Tim Pot Mickey Mouse Company, LTD, that was set up yesterday. That's definitely nothing to do with Binance. And the regulator literally just said to them, like, no, excuse me, we've just got an email saying that you're actually not the whatever. Yeah, that's really obvious, we know. And then they said, like, it was really funny that you got like an email like later that day being like, we sent an email saying that it would actually be this, but it's still us, and we're just going to not let you do certain things if you live in the UK anymore. So, I mean, I don't know. I think they're all playing it by ear a lot, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're trying to get away with whatever they can get away with to keep the magic money pipe chugging away.
This is the DYDX argument of like, hey, we just make the software and yeah, somebody else. developer. We're an open source project. We don't do anything. This is just
we don't really do anything.
Give it away for free, and somebody else does it. Null does it out of Australia. Go blame him. He's the one making the blocks.
I tap into words in the trade.
It's Null names. He's in Australia. He's where he lives. Like, he's the one making the blocks. He's the one that does it all. I don't do anything.
My worry is that argument will in the end work with regulators, because the people who have like the most money and influence at this point stored up are probably the centralized exchanges. But you know, whether or not you're actually making money on a given network as a validator is highly contextual, by which I mean the context is, are you in Cosmos or not? And if you're in Cosmos right now, you're not making money on those chains, unless you're in the top five. So this is one of the things that I've seen around discussion of like regulation activity and stuff, where, you know, you have to register and then there's like, you know, paperwork to fill out and all that sort of stuff. And you know, it, let's be real, the paperwork initially would probably be quite light, and then it would quickly become a job, you know, proper auditing, tracking, blah, 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 blah. Like getting an ISO, like 27001 or whatever it might be, like, you know, for cybersecurity. But you look at that and you go like, well, the problem is it's not like running a bank, what we do, or like infrastructure in general in this space is not like running a bank or custodying user funds in another industry, writing insurance policies, something like that, because all of those organizations know what they're making by operating. And in this space, you're like, well, look, you know, if you were just a Cosmos validator and you're in the UK right now, and they put that regulatory overhead on you, you'd be like, well, are we going to hire somebody to make us regulatorily compliant for a few shit chains? Now, we're probably just on bond, actually. Like, and the funny thing is, I don't think that's what the regulator would want. I mean, what the regulator would like is for you to have to pay a fee, submit them some reports, and then continue making money and getting taxed on it. That's I think the ideal situation, especially for validators where there's not really a user harm component. I mean, there is in Cosmos if you double sign, but not every chain has, you know, slashing. So I think, you know, slashing is the way that we get regulated, and on chains that don't have slashing and tombstoning, the argument for user harm by validators and node operators is very, very low. So I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder what's going to become of that argument over time. Obviously, we all have strong vested interest in where the regulation for that goes. But
yeah, I mean, the challenge here is also it's there's so much nuance in terms of what a validator does. In terms of, I mean, I view ourselves as auditors. We see transactions come in. We verify that those are accurate. We help package those up into a block, and we help, you know, ensure that the integrity of what's coming through. We have no ownership of what's coming through. We don't understand the source of what's coming through. The only thing we're saying is that what's coming through is true. And then that's basically what happens to the next one. So,
all right, I'm changing the description on my website. I'm now a block auditor.
We're a block auditor.
No, we don't audit anything.
We're verifier.
We order transactions.
We order. No, but there's more to ordering, right? Like there is some, obviously there's more to it, but anyway, so the idea that we are sponsoring or we're allowing transactions or we're doing those types of things is just kind of insane, right? So, I think that nuance is probably too detailed for most individuals that are responsible for determining whether these are securities or not. And what the role is that we have, and that's really the challenge. The challenge is like when the technology is so complex, or maybe not complex, but so nuanced that you try to put this into very basic terms, that those basic terms turn into the worst case scenario, right?
To be fair, this is where the ISO definitions I think help us a little bit, because the fact that there is now official ISO vocabulary for technical terms within distributed ledgers. Mm-hmm. And the one for validators, you know, you can kind of tap the sign almost and go like, you know, a node in a, I can't remember what it is, it's something like a node in a distributed.
It's always a Simpsons reference.
Software. Yeah, it's always a circuit, right? Their reference. But you tap the sign, you say, node operator in a distributed ledger system. But as somebody has pointed out in the chat, MEV kind of messes with that, right? And this was actually a conversation that I had before my week off, which was a discussion around, what do nodes do? You know, whatever. From the point of view of designing a proof of authority system for a project we're working on, where in this case, right, I'm using proof of authority to just mean permissioned blockchain, right?
So.
And it was like, well, yeah, but what do nodes actually do? What does a node do? What even is it? And it's just like, well, just ordering transactions was the thing that got put my way. And I was like, yeah, that's all we do. That's all we just order transactions. And then I was like, oh no, but actually we don't order transactions. We might literally attack the chain.
Yeah.
Because MEV is like, and it's back to the skip thing of like good guy MEV, bad guy MEV. It's all, I mean, it is.
But in that sense, doesn't matter.
Does okay, it,
but well, in the eyes of the SEC,
yeah, but so
it, friend of the show, ordering transaction potentially makes you a money transmitting business or even a broker dealer in the SEC's eyes. Whether it's good MEV or bad MEV doesn't matter, because we are ordering transactions based on a rule set, and so therefore are we you guys, I don't do this business anymore, but you guys. Just for, you know, does it make you a money transmitting business? Because even if it's a positive MEV structure where somebody who's a seeker or whatever else is paying for that placement, validators are you're taking reward in replacement of that. So therefore you are ordering transactions and are you a money transmitting business? That's crazy.
I think MEV, if you're running MEV software as a validator, it potentially will put you in a difficult situation down the line.
Fucking hell, man.
Because
that's brutal.
Well, so I was thinking about this from a different perspective, right? Which is in the UK, generally speaking, the regulatory threshold is all about user harm, right? And MEV is a really good mechanism for attacking somebody, right? If you know who you want to attack, like what the address is, and you have a mechanism, right? And that mechanism might be a smart contract 0-day, you know about. It might be some kind of flash loan, some kind of currency manipulation. You see that they're, you know, you could even just like watch, right? Like just set up a smart contract to watch until they do a thing or an oracle or something, and then just attack them with a sandwich transaction, right? The fact that you could do either an attack that's kind of like super targeted or like a kind of generic sort of phishing attack, like just hit them with an MEV attack like that, you know, when you know they're going to do something like ARB or blah, 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 blah. Like, that would result in not necessarily a loss of funds in the true sense, but they would lose money. There would be demonstrable user harm as a result of the transactions that were executed against them. If it was like a sandwich attack, let's say, and then the validator that did that attack will be culpable in user harm. And there is a question there about, like, so I'm kind of like, this is the space. This is, I think that user has to be alive to that risk. And actually, I don't think it's a solvable problem even actually by regulation. But I think I don't know that that's the view that the regulator will take. They might say, no, there's a threshold of user harm that is hypothetically or in reality been crossed here. And MEV might be the threshold. And so, you know, I take, you know, when we had Henry on from Penumbra, I think actually their take on this, which is that the eliminating front running and that kind of stuff via privacy in a DAX is actually a very desirable feature to avoid a regulator. And it's interesting that a regulator might be really upset about the privacy features when actually the privacy features reduce the possibility for user harm. And I think that's a really interesting argument. I don't know what will actually end up happening with that, but yeah, it's super. I think that whole area is super, super interesting in terms of like what defines an attack or even a cyber attack has become like very intrinsically tied to economics of win and lose, like game theory economics, basically. And it's like that's certainly, I spend quite a bit of my time at the moment talking across the boundary of like protocol and computer science and loosely game theory, I suppose, which I'm not qualified to speak on any of those things really, but you know, it's
it's interesting. Like it's weird to be a part of something that is being defined like this and where that outcome can affect things beyond just monetary. Like that conversation is very interesting, but I'm living in it. Like it's nice to be able to have an academic approach to say it and say, oh yeah, this is really interesting. Well, how it's going to work out. But at the same point, you're like, are we going to be, you know, determined as being a money transmitting business, which completely changes the future of what we're doing. Right. Which means that, and by completely changes, it means it ends.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I think there's going to be two things that happen in our space, right? Which is that for one reason or another, I think we're going to be regulated out of existence. Independent validators, that is. We're going to be regulated out of existence. And
ISO or no ISO.
Yeah. An institutional validator will take over, right? Because that's they're a known quantity and in the space where they make a lot of money, like a lot of money, like they're just, you know, it's just your class 8 nepotism will kind of take over. There'll be known financial entities, you know, name the ETF providers that you use for your pension, right? They're going to run infrastructure.
Why wouldn't they?
We're going to be running their teams for them in 10 years.
They can clearly run this infrastructure, right? There's nothing stopping that from happening. So why would you use a third?
And they already have the ties into the regulator and all that other stuff. Yeah. So that's one angle. And the other angle is that at the moment, almost every blockchain going is ridiculously centralized to a foundation. And the foundations want to decentralize, which in reality is going to be to create an ever increasing long tail of validators on their networks as far as they computationally are able to within the confines of their consensus protocol. And you know, there is an effective maximum size depending on the technology you're using, but that will push, and we've seen that in the Cosmos Bear, right? Will push a lot of validators who are kind of, you know, mid-tier independent validators will be pushed below their kind of tolerance for risk versus reward.
Yeah.
And what you'll see then is a reversion to people who are prepared to run on lower quality hardware, blah, 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 blah. You know, all the kind of things we talked about on the Poddo before.
Yeah.
But you know, I think these are kind of good things in a way. Like the current, I know we live in it, right? But I think that I don't think our business model in its current form goes away. But I don't think that it's the end of the world, right? Because the current status quo isn't like sustainable, like is my perception anyway. So it feels likely that given those two constraints, right, where one of the pushes is coming from the foundation end and the other push is coming from the regulator, what you'll probably end up having is something more regulated but more private. That's my theory there anyway, because that kind of seems to be the way that the CBDCs are going. And where you have CBDCs, you will get stuff grandfathered in that is adjacent, and that will be like more permissionless, more open, more whatever. And then on the other extent, you'll get like real anarcho CryptoPunk stuff, like cypherpunk stuff, where there isn't a foundation, because you can't attack a foundation if it doesn't exist. So you'll get much more decentralized systems that are actually fault tolerant in a way that they're not currently. That's my hope anyway. I mean, like anything else, it'll probably be a lot worse, like a lot kind of more raggedy and random than that optimistic version of things. It will just be like lots and lots of bodges, I suppose.
So if it's your first time listening to Game of Nodes, I would recommend that you hit subscribe now and listen to more of this content. We did define this with a "we are all going to jail" sticker, maybe made over a year ago. If you
2 years ago, no,
maybe, I don't know, reach out to us and either in YouTube or if you know from where you got this podcast and request one of these stickers. This is the original NFT, and and as we were talking about, we are in fact all going to jail, so this is something that is
near and dear to your heart.
It is. And if you're going to consensus this year, I think maybe three or four. Do we have an agreement on if all four of us are going? What is going on? Let's move off this topic.
I was for like a day, and then I'm not anymore. Because basically, right, okay. the conversation right. that happened was I was like, I'm thinking of going to consensus. Yeah. And then I was told, I was working, I was given a cup of tea and told, you know, you should go to consensus. I think that's a really good idea. You should go to consensus. Don't worry, things will be fine here for a week. And I was like, oh, great. Great idea. Started looking up, you know, flights and logistics and stuff like that. And then like the morning after, you know, having a cup of tea and stuff, everything here obviously just revolves around when you're having tea with your partner, right? Having a cup of tea. And I just get the question, oh, by the way, you have got, my sister's wedding in your diary, right? And I'm like, mm-hmm, sure.
But is just during that week?
Just for the sake of argument, let's just say that my phone's upstairs. What, remind me of the day again? It's like May 30th.
What? Oh, wait, what day is that? That's not, oh, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that like a Monday or something?
Or would it be 31st then?
Hmm. All right, I'm going to talk you into this.
It's something like that. Anyway, so I was just like, well, okay.
Oh, Saturday the 1st, June 1st is that's a Saturday. That might be it. Or the Friday the 31st.
Yeah, it must be the 1st then. Yeah, yeah. And then I was like, but what if I got a red eye flight on the 31st?
What if I showed up smelling like liquor and marijuana and, from the airport to the wedding?
And I got told in no uncertain terms that I would be back home to help take a baby across the country on the 31st.
Oh, it's not near you. You have to, like, there's a travel
yeah,
no, to
it's,
get
it's
to
on the other side of the country. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So I got told in no uncertain terms that it would, in fact, constitute unreasonable. It did not constitute unreasonable right. in any way to go to consensus, but it would constitute unreasonableness to not help out with taking the toddler across the country, which is that would be me pushing my luck a little bit. So yeah, right. It was a shame because you know when you're like not sure about whether you're going to do a thing and you're like and you finally, and then you like go, no, we're going to do it, and then you gear yourself up for it. I had like this 24-hour period where I was like looking up shit to do it after.
Fucking going, like, yeah, let's go.
I was like, right. Let's go. I'm gonna make a week of it. I've got a free pass. I've been told go for a week. There's no point pissing away all of that carbon flying and all that hassle. You can go for a full week. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's make the most of it. Let's think about who we can meet while we're there. You know, let's get some business in.
See, now, if you would have made this, what you should have learned here is if you would have made that decision earlier, you would have had flights booked and all this expectations set, and you would have gone, oh, I'm going to have to miss it.
Oh, shit.
Let me not yeah. realize that.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I was yeah, in yeah. first. Oh.
Oh, yeah. This is in. It's all booked. No.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Yeah. That's good to know because I got to book a house, so that helps me in the logistical side of the house.
Yeah, it's brutal. And then I was like, it's okay. I'll console myself. I'll go to Paris Blockchain Week because that'll be good. And then it was like, oh, you do know that I'm away for work for 4 days. Okay, which days? It's like the days of Paris Blockchain Week. And I was like, can I take a 40? Because to be fair, the wee one doesn't need mum anymore. Like every day or whatever, like, you know, we have technology to keep a 14 month old alive. Right. So
well, I was like, somebody has to be there. You can't like just,
oh yeah. Well, I need to be there, but I was like, yeah, okay, I was right, like, yeah, okay, yeah. Well, what if we were to go to Paris Blockchain Week together
as a family,
me and my wee one. And what? I looked into the logistics of,
just you two.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I was like, he doesn't care. Like, he's so chilled out around people. He just likes seeing things. It's like, whoa, whoa. And yeah. I was like, actually, you know what? But the thing is, I was like, the thing is, like, an exhibition floor, stuff like that, he'd find fascinating. He'd love it.
Yeah, that'd be
he'd
fine.
Be like,
yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, the stuff you actually need to do at a conference is you need to meet people, go for drinks, go for dinner, go to events. Those are mm-hmm. all after bedtime. And I've got to be around.
Yeah, I think it would be really difficult.
Yeah, it would be impossible, basically. So I was like, I fuck this all up. This spring, I've cocked it up. Need to take this lesson. Next year, be back on it.
Yeah. I mean, the lesson here is never have children.
I'm not sure that's the lesson. But I think the lesson... yeah.
Let me rephrase. When having children, priorities change and there are many things that you want to do, you cannot do.
Yeah. But
doesn't mean it's not a positive thing. I'm just saying that compromises have to be made. That's all.
I would say like it's taken up to this point, so like 14, 15 months to start to find a good compromise balance between the needs of what is a completely new family dynamic,
yeah,
and work. Like it
yeah,
because you kind of like expect, I, this was at least like naively what I expected, right? I expected that it would be super like big change day one, which it is. And then
yeah,
when you go back to work, like you would be like, okay, here's, I have to figure out a routine like straight away. And then there would be some slow changes on a bunch of other things. But that basically, as soon as you're back to work, that's the biggest changes out of the way. And that 100% has not been what happened. It's actually much, because the thing I didn't bank on was that your attitude changes as well. So like you mechanically go back to work after 10 days, but you have like so much less energy to like, the way you prioritize needs to change. And mm-hmm. It's taken me like over a year to like now, this last month or so, when I've been writing a thesis paper and trying to do some new business stuff and trying to keep up with some of our existing contracts. It's been the mm-hmm. first time where like I've got to the end of my week and I've got like my to-do list and stuff is like, what I would say is like a reasonable amount of stuff has been crossed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been like, fucking hell, it's taken a year to get to the point where the end of my list, the end of the week isn't just like a pile of random shit where I've like just prioritized everything wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever seen Lost in Translation?
Yeah, great film.
No? Schulze? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that quote from Bill Murray when he says about kids? And I think Scarlett asks him about, you know, because I don't know if she's pregnant. I don't remember if she's pregnant in the movie. I don't think about that. But I just had to look up the quote because I always remember that quote. And people always, you know, people who are having kids who are entering into this and like just kind of going into that phase of their life. And I think Murray says, your life as you know it is gone, never to return, which is totally true. Like your life just changes, like what, like your priorities and like just what time you have and like the, like how you manage, it's a shitty way of thinking about it, but how you think about time and those types of things. And he continues, but they learn how to walk, they learn how to talk, and you want to be with them, and they turn out to be the most delightful people you ever meet in your life, which is totally, it's such a great line in a movie. It's totally true. Like it does, like what you think your life is and where you're headed, and after these things come into your life, it's totally different. Your life is gone. Like your priorities are gone, your aspirations are gone, how you manage your time is gone, your relationship with your partner is gone. All those things are completely changed, and they're totally different. And then they learn how to walk and they learn how to talk, which is true, because like early on it's fucking brutal. But after they learn how to manage themselves, like our kids are, you know, over 10. So, but they can be on their own and they can have their own lives and they can learn how to, you know, go through these processes and middle school is a fucking crazy time, but whatever. But then they start to, you know, you something that turned into a something that you were required to do to turn into a, there's another task, right? Kid has to be fed, kid has to take a shit, kid has to, like it just turns into more work. Is what they are. Like, they're maintenance item, right? It's like a lawn that grows 4 inches every hour. Like it's like that type of thing. Like it's just like it's those things, like it's like a constant pager.
I was trying to explain
this. The worst type of pager duty.
I was trying to explain this to a friend of mine. And I was like, in what you do you have any equivalent like pager duty or something like that? And they were like,
and they didn't. You're the worst pager duty. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it's kind of like you have 8 slots in your day, right? And you start the day and 5 of them are filled. And yet you have to go to work for 8 hours and do 5 things in the remaining 3 slots. And then you get to the end of the day and you're really frustrated every day that it didn't go as well as you thought because you were too tired and too busy and your mind was elsewhere and you were thinking about whether you had done X, Y, Z or whatever. Hey, have you ever seen that? There's a really good Scott Hanselman talk, which is about effectively like prioritization and decision-making, stuff like that. It's for software engineers primarily, but it works for, in fact, it's not even just for technologists. Like it's a very, very general talk to the point that I've given it to people who don't even work in the sector and they found it somewhat useful. And it's called Scaling Yourself, I think. But he has a similar thing, right? Where he says, oh, you know, I used to think, he was like, the best, if you are unsure about how you prioritize in your life, I can recommend that you have children, because if your prioritization is bad now, you are going to die when you have kids. He was like, I used to be like, oh yeah, you know, I'll go to a conference and do this, that, and the other. And then now I'm just like, no, I have 52 weekends a year to spend with my 4-year-old, and I'm going to spend as many of them as I can. And that is my priority. That's what it solved for me. It is like whatever your number one used to be, it's now occupied. Think about what your number two and three should be.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's, I think that's actually one of the most accurate ways I've had it described. But it takes a while to work out what the other things are in your headspace, I suppose. And like with this, I think, like, you know, like Noel was giving me some tough love before I went away, like 2 weeks ago, about, like, you know,
as
like
he does.
What's that?
As he does.
Yeah, yeah. But
I got some of that too at one point. Yeah. It's good. Well,
I mean, I think, like I was describing earlier, like I'm not like super, what's it called? Not super bullish on where this industry is going for independent validator teams like ours. I mean, but I think mm-hmm. that we all have, in fact, one of, I think it was your business partner said, actually, SERP, which was like, you know, well, you know, if you know, anything that you learn yourself, you take with you to every venture that you do, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think like the thing with what validators do is that this is all going, like, even if the industry changes, there will be a lot of use for the skills and the and everything that's kind of come out of this process. So like a big part of what I've been thinking about recently is like, what are the most useful things we've learned, right? You know, from the last 3 years. That's like, it's crazy to reflect on where we were, like, you know, when like the first Stargaze testnets were and stuff, like, mm-hmm. like how much has happened since then in terms of, you know, business and like learning of this space and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's genuinely quite exhausting as soon as you start going like, whoa, why do I feel like, you know, having taken some time off and stuff and kind of knocked some of the burnout on the head, you go like, well, why was I burned out in the first place? And you go, let's make a list of all the things that we've learned or dealt with over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's a big list.
Speaking of Stargaze, should we talk about sloths?
We should probably talk about sloths. Do you want to?
We should, right? Because that actually, I think just recently, was it today?
So I missed this as well, as I always do with these memes and whatever. But
I did too. I actually did some work to prep. No, are you in this? Do you know any sloths?
I do not have any sloths.
I don't either.
Damn. Nobody, no sloths in this. I didn't realize.
Are you a sloth guy? You've got sloths?
No, I have no sloth.
Oh, Frey, no sloth.
I don't play on Stargaze, so I don't have stars to burn.
Is it, I thought they were a different network.
No, it's Stargaze. Oh, actually, I
thought it was Tia.
It's something related to Celestia, but I don't know exactly where it came from.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's on Stargaze, but something with, or originated on Tia, I think. Like, maybe the community did.
Okay, I didn't know that part. So yeah, so it actually flipped Bad Kids, I think today. I'm pretty sure it was today.
How is that possible?
That's what I thought. Actually, it might have just changed what we were talking about. But the floor price of sloths when we started this episode was like 160,000 stars, which is something like, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000 or something like that. But it did flip Bad Kids today. I'm not sure if it still is. It is, let's see, how many?
Celestine Sloth Society, 148,000 stars.
Yeah, I think that actually is down a little bit since we've been talking, but I think it actually maxed out around 170,000 stars, which I think is maybe $5,000, something like that, as a floor price, which is pretty decent, right? I'm talking an ETH and a half or something like that. Yeah, so I feel like, I don't know, I'm a Bad Kids holder. Now I feel like I'm out of the fucking loop. so fast it fucking happens. What the hell?
I mean, they've been out since the 7th of April. So
I know. Well, I had to, I prepped a bunch of stuff on the IPFS side to get this going because I think the team knew it was going to be a big mint, and the way that we prep in terms of some images, sometimes those they get released late, and so we want to be able to pin those like a little bit before the mint and make sure it's a good mint. But at the same point, you don't want to release them so people don't know exactly what they are, and so there's a little bit of timing in there, and so when that was going, like right before the mint, we started pinning those. I was looking at, I just pinned them. Wasn't really thinking about what they were. And then, yeah, here we are. I think there's a public mint too and everything else, right? I missed my opportunity. Some bitch.
There's also some coping punks trending quite high in the volume.
Yeah. 2 million stars in terms of volume. Yeah. That's high too. That could still, like, I mean, honestly, 22 million stars over, do you know I don't know what this volume is. Is that 24 hours?
I think it's 24 7 hours,
days. Yeah. That's 7 days. My bad. Oh, wait.
But it's down quite a bit as well. It was up at, 192 stars. So,
yeah.
It's taken a bit of a dive lately.
Was it 192? But also, well, yeah. And Stargaze is really, I mean, the price is also up 35% in the last week, but it's also way down from, it was like over a nickel, I think, not that long ago. Now it's back down to 3 cents. When it dropped down to, I don't know if it got underneath 2 cents, but it was pretty close.
I mean, over 10 cents is reasonably respectable price.
Yeah. We got to pump Stargaze to a dollar. Let's get that going. Let's get that going, people. Rama says they minted in TIA on Stargaze. Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty
cool. I mean, if Stars goes to over a dollar, that would neatly make any thoughts about new business completely irrelevant, I think.
Right. Or Juno to $45.
This is actually back to another problem of the space that we work in, right? But I think part of the reason why I'd got so burnt out, like, was because I'd had this realization that, like, I specifically work like, I don't know, X number of hours. I don't even know how many hours, whatever, on this project and that project, like how a year, right? And loads of hours and, made us like, 0 cents or whatever. The name service actually did make us quite a bit of money. It was like 3 weeks of work. Like, Juno, we made some money as a validator and this and that. But like between all the chain halts and all the dev work and all that sort of stuff, like, I don't know, as soon as you start adding up, like what you, in this space anyway, what you put your time and energy into versus what actually has a business return, like you realize you're just rolling a random die, yeah. And you're rolling one dice and it says like how many days of your life, well, not days of your life, months of your life you have to put into that project, and you roll the other die and you find out, whether or not it's going to be a return. And both of those die are like, they might be a D6 or they might be a D100, and you don't know what the die is going to come up as, and you don't know what kind of die you're rolling. It could be like, yes, you have to do 100 months of work on this and you're going to make $1. And you're like, okay, cool. And this other one, you're like, you're going to have to put 5 minutes of work in and you're going to make $100,000. And it's going to be the most profitable thing your business does this year. And you're like, but wait, what the fuck? Like, when you're used to like normal business contracts or like retainers or just like doing a day job where you just go into a company for 9 hours a day, it's very, I don't know, I still have never got used to that. I know we should have done now 3 years of doing this shit, right?
It's because it makes no sense. Yeah.
It's because it makes no sense.
FYI.
That is one thing you get from academia, to be fair, when people are like, they ask a thing and you go, oh, that's not how it works, it's this, it's much more like insane, and people go like, that sounds like it makes no sense. And you're like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Were you looking for logic? Is that what you're looking for?
But why would people participate in that if X, Y, Z is true? And you're like,
Because it's a dog with a hat.
It's a dog with a hat. Very important that we recognize that.
Oh, is that still going up? I forgot about that. My dog with hat.
Did you sell it? Are you still an owner?
No, still bag holder for life.
Bag holder, dog with hat?
Yeah.
To the moon, baby.
To the moon. When it goes the way of the, I can't remember those other shit coins.